Turn your radios up. It's Ralph Schumann and Maya Shum. If I take a name, so forget the rest. Take a name is the best. They got it all from live shows to hidden reality on DVDs. So stay tuned and listen up. Matter of fact, turn your dials up, because you're now listening to Take a Name with Ralph Schumann and Maya Shum. Yeah.
This is Taking Aim.
Ralph Schoenman.
And Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Clerical Dictatorship and the Structure of the Iranian Economy. Today on Taking Aim, we are going to discuss Iran. But before we do so, we're going to have a brief conversation with Ted Walter, Executive Director of New York City CAN, responsible for a petition drive for a referendum on an independent 9/11 investigation. Ted, welcome to Taking Aim.
Thank you very much for having me, Matt.
Yes, Ted, it's so good to be with you. We've been very much involved with this work, as you know, working closely with Frank Morales and Bill Pepper and Les Jameson. If you give us an update on where we are on this and what the prospects are, please.
Sure. Last Wednesday, June 24th, the New York City Coalition for Accountability Now, NYC CAN, filed the petition with 52,000 signatures. The petition that we filed is calling for a referendum on the creation of a New York City independent commission to investigate 9/11. And this referendum would happen on the November 3rd ballot, which is this year is the mayoral election. So there'll be lots of New Yorkers going to the polls. We also have an additional 8,000 signatures in hand, which we're saving for the end of the summer in the unlikely event that City Council does not accept the referendum going on the ballot. So the 52,000 signatures that we delivered last week will hopefully suffice for the first 30,000 that's required to put it before City Council. And now we will spend the next 6 weeks working with City Council to pass the petition. We have a large number of 9/11 families and first responders and survivors who have joined us in the campaign who will be talking to their representatives in the next few weeks about supporting the petition. We're pretty optimistic that City Council will support it. In the unlikely event that they don't, we would like to come in at the end of the summer with an additional 30,000 signatures, which would hopefully suffice for 15,000 signatures to override the potential City Council veto. The rest of the summer now is about getting to that 30,000 mark. We have 8,000.
How can people continue to sign the petition, and how can they learn more about New York City CAN?
And how can they involve themselves in this critical work?
The easiest way to get involved is to go to the website, and if you're a New York City resident, you can help us petition. We're at Union Square every day and other locations throughout the city, and we have a huge volunteer contingent that's collected thousands of signatures in the last year. The website is nyccan.org. So that's nyccan.org.
Great.
And so you can sign up on the website, and we'll contact you about getting involved and helping us petition. The other easy way to help is by simply donating. We do have a professional staff of petitioners who collect about one signature for every dollar that's donated. So if somebody wants to donate $50, that'll help us get 50 signatures. Or $5,000 will help us get 5,000 signatures.
Great. Now, Ted, we wanted to have a full program of Taking Aim on what is involved here in the inside job of 9/11 and the efforts to finally obtain a real commission of inquiry with subpoena power to bring to justice those who are involved and to bring the evidence, the massive evidence, before the widest possible public. Tell us, please, the family members and survivors who will be joining us.
I hope that will be Donna Marshall Connor. She's the mother of Vanessa Lang Langer, who died in the South Tower, and Charlie Giles of the Feel Good Foundation, which has done some incredible work in getting financial and health care remedies to the first responders, those who were down on the pile in the months after September 11th.
Excellent.
And as we've been discussing on Taking Aim, this is a critical move on the part of the people of New York City. Here is your opportunity to have a full investigation of the events of 9/11 and to pinpoint those responsible for 9/11.
The inside job, of which 9/11 is a paradigm that we have been describing and discussing on Taking Aim since September 11th, 2001.
Today on Taking Aim, we've been having a brief conversation with Ted Walter, Executive Director of New York City CAN.
Thank you so much, Ted.
Great. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Now, for the clerical dictatorship and the structure of the Iranian economy. Bonyads are charitable trusts in Iran that dominate Iran's non-petroleum economy. They control 20% of Iran's gross domestic product. These charitable trusts originally were set up by the Shah. Ayatollah Khomeini expropriated the Shah's resources as well as those of the millionaires of Iran and turned them over to the clerics. On Thursday, June 9th, the state-run Fars News Agency that is affiliated to the Iranian regime's Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, released a 9,500-word report that attacked Ali Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani. He's an Ayatollah religious leader. He was the Speaker of Parliament and Khomeini's right-hand man in the 1980s. He was the president of Iran from 1989 to 1997. Today, he's the chairman of the powerful Expediency Council, which resolves disputes between the clerical establishment and parliament. And he is the chair of the Assembly of Experts. It's an 86-member council that picks the supreme leader, who is now Khamenei, who was backing President Ahmadinejad. Let's look at Rafsanjani a little bit closer.
Let me make one point about this, Maya. This is an extraordinary report, and the title of it is Detailed Report on the Activities of the Wealth and Power Mafia. This is the language of a faction of the regime, and it is a description of the actual nature of the clerical regime itself, although it attempts to ascribe the corruption and the greed and the integration of all wealth within the cabal to only one wing of the regime. But I would point out that the front cover story of Forbes magazine in 2003 called Iran's Millionaire Mullahs, which actually has the photograph on the cover, Rafsanjani, as we will expose and describe, is really an account of the behavior and structure of the economy, the clerical regime, the corporate nature of this corruption and of this essential hijacking of the wealth of a nation.
The crony capitalism of Iran. Back to the credentials of Rafsanjani. According to the millionaire mullahs, it was Rafsanjani that broke Iran's international isolation by establishing trade relations with the Soviet Union, China, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. He's also the father of Iran's privatization program. And during his presidency, the stock market was revived. Some government companies were sold to insiders, foreign trade was liberalized, and the oil sector was opened to private companies. Most of the good properties and contracts, writes Forbes magazine, ended up in the hands of mullahs, their associates, and not least Rafsanjani's own family, who rose from modest origins as small-scale pistachio farmers. Today, they have a monopoly on pistachio farming, a major export of Iran. To go now to this report, the report that was released by the Fars News Agency, and again, this is a news agency that is affiliated with the Revolutionary Guard and close to the mullah's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei's faction. It reads, Mafia is the term used to describe highly influential groups which work hidden and act like an octopus which controls the country's networks of finance, trade, and industry. Mafia groups incessantly intend to gain wealth. In order to gain and to hold on to the wealth, they necessarily need to have power as well. Mafia, with its infinite wealth, through supporting some politicians first, it attempts to impose its will on them. As such, the wealth network will enjoy the backing of the politicians. We should note here that Rafsanjani has backed the opposition candidate Mousavi. So the attack of the Fars News Agency is very important to the Iranian elections.
Let me mention, Amaya, that Hashemi Rafsanjani was the essential organizational figure for Ayatollah Khomeini. As I mentioned in our last program, I spent a lot of time with Rafsanjani when I went to Paris to meet with Khomeini prior to our returning to Tehran. And Rafsanjani is the organizational operative, the man who commanded the apparatus, the man who had tremendous input in the repression. He actually wrote in Kayhan, the Tehran Daily, that they would address 500,000 excitable Muslims. This is even at the moment before they had seized complete control. They were already declaring that they were going to operate a system of mass repression against any who were taking to the streets at that time, against any who would challenge the clerical dictatorship they had in mind.
Now, the report continues, and as Ralph mentioned, this report is entitled Mafia of Wealth and Power and discusses calling the Rafsanjani family a deadly infected tumor. It continues, over the past few years, and particularly in the years following the war between Iran and Iraq, an extremely large mafia has come to existence in our country, which seeks to gain wealth and expand its power through enjoying numerous governmental privileges. The so-called Kargazaran-e-Sazandagi party circle and dynasty of Mr. Hashemi Rafsanjani is a clear example of this mafia network. In this series of articles, we will try to introduce them and mention their activities under two separate titles of, quote, power-thirsty eminences and wealth and power mafia. Now, let's look at some of the aspects unveiled by the Fars News Agency report. Colossal embezzlements of threats and intimidation using front companies. Taking advantage of grants given to oil companies, including Natural Condensed Gas Company. We should note that Rafsanjani, one of his sons, is the head of the Iranian state gas company. Receiving billions of dollars in foreign oil contracts. Handing over large sums of bribes to middlemen dealing with major oil companies such as Total, Elf, Statoil, and Norinco. Using influence within the oil ministry to grant contracts to certain targeted companies. Forming a shipping line to facilitate smuggling of goods. Setting up money laundering network, smuggling antiques and illegal commodities, dominating Kish Island as a free trade zone and making massive profits in trade, holding monopoly of the air industries, taking advantage of the country's ports and customs services, making huge benefits using special privileges in import and export and smuggling goods through various ports, holding the monopoly of pistachio trade and eliminating minor traders in this business, massive foreign investments such as building highways, luxurious tourist centers, holiday villas in Canada, setting up oil equipment companies in Britain, swindling Arab sheikhs and plundering billions of dollars allocated to foundations dealing with special diseases. The control of newspapers. What isn't noted in this report is the many private universities that the Rafsanjani family has constructed in Iran. Ralph, to the details of the report.
Well, I want to mention, as you have indicated, Maya, that this language, this is extraordinary language, brothers and sisters. This is not the language of revolutionary organizations alone. I should rather say that it is the language which the workers' movement has used to describe this clerical dictatorship and the nature of the mullah regime, the theocratic regime, but it is a measure of the crisis facing the regime itself, that the language has been internalized by a faction of it in attempting to extract itself from the crisis it faces, the generic crisis of the unfolding revolutionary struggle in Iran. A blunt instrument may be that has unleashed a challenge to the regime from none other than Rafsanjani and Mousavi, but let's be clear as to what is being said here. The power-thirsty eminences, the power mafia, the dynasty of Rafsanjani. We hope to play a small part, the report says on Fars, in preventing the creation of a monopoly by notifying the people about the threat of this disgraceful, this deadly tumor. The horrific and horrendous group does not face obstacles on their way. They will climb the ladder of power and accelerate the process of gaining and preserving their wealth and creating multi-layer impenetrable immunity for them on the other hand. The shadow cabinet of the mafia does everything to reach its target, to obtain its objectives. It threatens, it blackmails, it insults, it attacks the people's dignity, as well as engaging in their physical elimination, methods used by the mafia in confronting rivals and removing any obstacle in its way. Over the past few years, and particularly in the years following the war between Iran and Iraq, this report, official report on Forrest, states, an extremely large mafia has come to existence in our country. It seeks to gain wealth, expand its power through numerous governmental privileges. And this account is very, very specific. This is a 33-page extract from this report, brothers and sisters, and it is breathtaking in its particularity and what it exposes about the actual nature of this regime from within. In 2001, through enforcing his influence and power, Mr. Mohammad Hashemi, Mr. Hashemi Rafsanjani's brother, took possession of multi-hectares of land which belonged to the National Resources Lands, number 21, named as Lalan, located in the town of Shemiranat in Fasham in northern Tehran. The director of the National Resources Land in Tehran province, Ghulam Abbas Abdinejad, wrote in a letter to the notary office, this is a letter number 67/11697, to the notary office 539 in Tehran, dated 16th July 2004, requesting them to register and confirm the transfer of 12,450 square meters of lands belonging to the National Resources Land, named as Lalan, to Mr. Mohammad Hashemi personally, in accordance with a license 2321/5 dated 28 May 2001. This handover of a huge section of North Tehran was issued by the head of National Organizations of Forests and Pastures. Before the document's transfer to the personal ownership of Mr. Mohammad Hashemi was completed, he took action to sell or fake contracts for transferring parts of this land to his close relatives. The document continues, and it states, prior to the above measures, in item 1, Mohammad Hashemi established Kosai Pars Company, registered with number 202662, at the name of Hamdi Dresa Nazari, Rafsanjani's brother-in-law. And it goes into the particulars of the registration and the name of the front company. The article continues, the cultural complex of the revealers, which belongs to Mohammad Hashemi, sold tracts of land from land number major 24. It is noteworthy that Mr. Mohammad Hashemi built cottage complexes, notably Fadak and Rehana, in parts of the land of which he took possession. And it states, Organization for the Improvement of the Fuel Consumption and the Dynasty of Mr. Hashemi. The Organization for the Improvement of Fuel Consumption is totally dominated, the statement continues, by the wealth and power mafia. In addition to earning huge incomes through this organization, the mafia exploits it as a cover-up for organizing and giving financial backing to its cronies, their activities, and their deeds. The concession of construction, repair, maintenance, and renting of congested natural gas distribution centers has been granted to members of this family through the Organization for Improvement of Fuel Consumption. The family of Mr. Hashemi uses these privileges to finance 100 local and provincial newspapers for 7 million rials, and several national newspapers for 1 billion rials, to build up a public opinion to comply with the policies and the power and the wealth of the power mafia.
And Ralph, it is no wonder that the son of modest pistachio farmers controls eventually the monopoly of pistachio exports in Iran, and is one of the richest people, is the richest person in Iran, and one of the richest people in the world.
Foundation of Special Diseases denotes for the election campaign. Tehran, at the time, to annul the magnificent plan for the expansion of Jamshide Park, which would encompass gardens, and was handed over to the family. Such wrong economical policies of the so-called construction government under Hashemi Rafsanjani as president, the report continues, brought harmful consequences to the country, including expanding class differences and the gap between the rich and the poor. During these years, brothers and sisters, note this. This is the official report. During these years, the gap between the rich and the poor expanded to 70 to 1. While a rich person was granted 700,000 reals, a poor person earned 10,000. A very complicated mafia has been created in Iran, and the dynasty of Mr. Hashemi Rafsanjani played a very important role in its leadership. Emergency conditions during the war with Iraq created a situation in which the government monopolized the economy. When the war ended and the emergency conditions ceased, privatization of the economy was brought to attention, and the new conditions in the field of the economy provided government managers and families of officials with huge economic privileges. Amongst all, the dynasty of Mr. Hashemi Rafsanjani was the one which enjoyed the privileges the most, and this was not the end. It was the beginning. Those enjoyed privileges in the fields of power and politics combined together, and a mafia network emerged known as the Kargozaran. The party aimed at legalizing the maintenance of these privileges. They decided to safeguard their prominent presence in the lawmaking centers and to maintain Mr. Hashemi as the president, and they calculated that this would bring them even more loot in the future. Announcement of the Kargozan-e-Sazandegi party at the fifth run of the parliamentary elections aimed at materializing these objectives. The wealth and power mafia brought about new conditions, and having lost their foothold on some privileges, they found their existence for gaining power and wealth threatened. Hence, they brought Mr. Hashemi to the scene, and they sought to expand the power that they already accumulated. Mayim.
Ralph, we have to note again that this is a power struggle between sectors of the Iranian elite, because this is released by the Revolutionary Guard under the control of the President Ahmadinejad, two sectors for control of the Iranian economy and the politics of Iran. I'd like to defer a little to another article, and then you can return to that one, because it's not just the Rafsanjani family that is being attacked. Iran Focus, June 29th, 2009, referred to an article from February 2nd, 2006, called Exclusive, Iran's Rulers Amass Fortunes Through Sleaze. So during this time of the election process, Iran Focus is bringing up information that they had revealed earlier. Originally, they had discussed this in February of 2003.
Well, Maya, since I think it's appropriate, we want to return to the credible document that we've been citing, but the Iran Focus makes clear that it's really a question of the pot calling the kettle black, because all factions of this regime are part of the very mafia that is described here. The clerical fascism, if you like, of the theocratic dictatorship in Iran is predicated above all on pillage, on assembling the entire architecture of the economy into the hands of a handful of rich clerics and their apparatus. Here, exclusive information throwing light on sleaze at the senior echelons of officialdom in the Islamic Republic. Iran Focus will list the senior officials of the clerical regime and the personal fortunes each one has amassed. Most of these officials rose from lower middle class backgrounds to fabulous wealth gathered through corruption and embezzlement. In eighth place is Ali Janati, son of the powerful cleric Ayatollah Ahmad Janati, a senior official in Iran's interior minister. The Janati family's private wealth today is estimated at 2 trillion rials, the equivalent of $220 million, and that is only the tip of the iceberg. The senior cleric Ahmad Janati is the head of the powerful Guardians Council and is the closest advisor to the supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei.
Let me just interrupt a moment to say that it is the Guardians Council that chooses the candidates for the presidential election, and also has verified the election results.
And so we may see, brothers and sisters, that when one talks about an election being stolen in Iran, as has been the subject of discussion over the current uprising in Iran, centering around the perception of a stolen election, the election has been stolen from its inception, because this handful of clerics and their guardians' council and their supreme dictator, if you like, their leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, restrict who can run for office. It can only be amongst the actual apparatus called here a mafia that the people are entitled to choose. It's between one faction versus another. But what Iran Focus does here is to document that what has been exposed as a mafia by the faction that is opposed to Rafsanjani is a description of its own conduct, as this Iran Focus document displays. Seventh place amongst that list is Ayatollah Abulhassem Ghazali, member of the Guardians Council. The powerful council, whose members are handpicked by the supreme leader, is comprised of six clerics, six senior judges, and may veto any majlis, that is to say parliamentary, legislation. Ghazali's estimated wealth is 2.5 trillion rials, coming from sea trading, paper imports, and book sales.
That's the equivalent of $275 million.
And sixth place is Ayatollah Mohammad Yazdi, Iran's former judiciary chief, a member of the Guardians Council, and the senior cleric's estimated wealth was 3 trillion rials, or $330 million. Now, these are only the money calculations. It does not begin to address the value of the economic elements that they hold, the property, the seaports, all sectors of the economy that has been essentially usurped by them.
And, Ralph, we will discuss that later in the show.
Fifth place, Iraqi-born Ayatollah Mohammad al-Tashkiri. For years, he headed the Islamic Culture and Communications Organization, the ICCO. Since 1995, the ICCO has been active in exporting fundamentalism directed against Iranian dissidents outside of Iran. Khamenei himself is in charge of the organization's policymaking council, and its meetings are held at his personal residence, adding up the lands in his name and his cash flow. Tashkiri's personal wealth is above 3 million rials.
3 trillion.
3 trillion, excuse me.
The equivalent of $330 million.
Again, this is a cash number which doesn't even begin to describe the value of the property they control. Number four in Iran's rich list is Ayatollah Ali Meshkini. He is the speaker of the Assembly of Experts, the exclusively clerical body that designates the country's supreme leader. In a country where many of the theocracy's ruling elite are in-laws, talk about nepotism, Meshkini is father-in-law to Mohammad Reshahri, the Islamic Republic's first minister of intelligence and security. Meshkini's personal wealth, coming from mostly sugar trade and industrial-scale printers, is over 3 trillion rials. That's, again, the cash value of $330 million, apart from property controlled and owned. Well ahead at third place is the commandant of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards, Mohsen Rezai. Mirzai is a close aide to former President Ayatollah Ali Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani, amassing a personal wealth of 6 trillion rials, $660 million. At the top of the IRGC, Rezai was known by many titles ranging from Major General to Dash Sagir General, which translates literally as the general who takes commissions.
And it is Rezai who was one of the presidential candidates.
Number two on the list of the officials who have become notoriously rich is Ayatollah Vais Tabassi, known as the Sultan of Khorasan. Vais Tabassi and his children have amassed an estimated fortune of 7 trillion rials, $770 million. Their income is primarily from the sugar trade and the sale of national real estate in Iran's central Quds province. At the top slot comes, unsurprisingly to Iran observers, Ayatollah Ali Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani, whose family rules over a vast financial and business empire. from the pistachio farms of his hometown, Rafsanjan, to huge oil trading companies, the ruling theocracy's former president has used his power and influence to expand his wealth. The most conservative estimates put his fortune at beyond the 10 trillion rial mark, the equivalent of $1.1 billion. This, again, is just the cash. Most of the powerful cleric's enormous wealth is vested in the hands of sons and daughters and other close relatives, his brothers, nephews, brothers-in-law, and sons-in-law. One of his villas was sold in 2004 for 29 billion rials. That's just one villa. His brother Mohammed Hashemi, the former chief of State Broadcasting Corporation, owns the company, which imports all industrial-scale printers. The image of rich ayatollahs driving around in bulletproof Mercedes has become the butt of many jokes and the cause of much resentment in a country where, according to World Bank figures, the per capita income has fallen to one-fifth of its 1970s value. Despite Iran's huge export revenues and unexpected surpluses from the giant oil market jumps, the country's budget is in a state of flux and shows no signs it can sustain any time soon a process of growth. Inflation is officially at 16% and rising, and economic growth rate is projected to fall in the foreseeable future. This is the Iran Focus summation, which is useful to interject here, Maya, because it does what this report, powerful as it is, does not. It shows that this mafia of wealth and power is not just a faction of Rafsanjani, but embraces all components of the clerical dictatorship of the mullahs in Iran. Maya?
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Shonman
and Maya Shon. Our program today, The Clerical Dictatorship and the Structure of the Iranian Economy. Ralph?
The theocratic republic, the Islamic Republic of Iran, is a gang of predators, mafiosi, that has enriched itself in the name of God. The gang recognizes itself, as this article that we were citing from the Fars release, on behalf of the anti-Rafsanjani faction of the clerics. The gang recognizes itself, it states, as the owner and master of Kish, and grasp its economy in a manner that all foreigners who come to Kish for trade pay a huge amount of commission to the children of Mr. Hashemi under different pretexts, like donations to charity. In addition to all other activities, the report continues, this mafia has established a landing ground for private planes through which they directly import their commodities to Iran. A huge amount of this economic monopoly is designed to facilitate smuggling. According to documents, Mr. Mohammed Hashemi Rafsanjani's brother, received a part annually of the presidential budget to donate to whom he wishes. He has delivered to the Administrative Financial Office of the Presidential Institution a list of 30 pages of names who receive gold coins and money as gifts from him. Mohammed Hashemi, brother of Hashemi Rafsanjani, along with his family, Mehdi Hashemi and family, and the Marashi family, travel to Mecca in private jets, while commoners wait for months for their turn to be able to go to Mecca. A close contact to Faiz Rafsanjani, the daughter, explains a few facts concerning her business activities in Canada. She has been given the largest and well-equipped building construction companies in Canada. They build housing units and holiday villas in the more secluded natural resource of Canada. Faizet transfers construction designs and receives a twofold profit. She is an active business company involved in export and imports of goods facilitated by the regime, has invested working closely with mafia groups on the export of cosmetic products throughout the world. Mohammed Hashemi has illegally changed the laws concerning his land, which was categorized by the 7th Article Commission supervised by Karbashi, the mayor of the time, to be filed as cultivating land bearing fruit. That is to say, the productive land for fruit and produce is in the hands of the brother of Hashemi Rafsanjani, Mohammed Hashemi. The aforementioned land is registered under the name of Hashemi's wife's name, Kadya Nazari, and their children, with the reference 838/3. And according to the expert, the value of the land leapt from 5 billion rials and has been usurped by Mohammed Hashemi. It is mind-boggling, brothers and sisters, the exposure of the nature of this rotten regime.
Ralph, let's look at what happened after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, when there was nationalization of the wealth of the Shah and also those associated with him. The turning over, the confiscation of all this property, turning over was called nationalization, but it wasn't really nationalization because it didn't remain in the state. Instead, the property was transferred to these Islamic charities. As I mentioned, the Bonyards control about 20% of the gross domestic product of Iran. They're involved in everything from soybean and cotton fields to hotels to soft drinks to shipping lines. The largest, the Foundation of the Oppressed and Disabled, controls 20% of the country's production of textiles, 40% of soft drinks, 2/3 of all glass products, and a dominant share in the tiles, chemicals, tires, and foodstuffs industry. The employment of these Islamic charities has been, there's no way of actually understanding because there's no reporting. They don't pay taxes and they have no official reporting. The estimates are ranging to as many as 5 million people. Probably more, because this wouldn't include all the volunteers who work for these Islamic charities. Now, let's look at some of the implications. According to Shia Muslim tradition, devout businessmen are expected to donate 20% of profits to their local mosques. And aside from these large Islamic charities, each city, town, and village has its own Islamic charity, controlling the land and the businesses in that town and village. If we look at the largest, the Foundation of the Oppressed and War Invalids, after the Iran-Iraq War, it assumed this title because it was in charge of dispensing aid to the veterans, and it was only a few years later that this was taken over by the state. This is the second largest commercial enterprise in the country, behind the state-owned National Iranian Oil Company. And until recently, it was run by a man named Mufsan Rafiq Dost. He's the son of a vegetable and fruit merchant. Rafiq Dost got his big break in 1979 when he was chosen to drive Ayatollah Khomeini from the airport after his triumphal return from exile in Paris. Khomeini made him the minister of the Revolutionary Guards. And in 1989, when Rafsanjani became president, Rafiq Dost gained control of the Mustafzafan Foundation, that's the Foundation of the Oppressed, which employs up to 400,000 workers and has assets that probably exceed, according to Forbes magazine, $10 billion. Among its holding, the former Hyatt and Hilton hotels in Tehran, the successful Zamzam soft drink company, which was once Pepsi, as I had mentioned, to controlling a large share of the soft drink market. It owns an international shipping line and companies producing oil products and cement, and most of all, swaths of farmland and urban real estate. When it comes to real estate, I want to refer to an article in the Wall Street Journal, Inside Iran's Holy Money Machine, which talks about a very large charity, which is the Shrine of Iman Reza. Ralph?
Well, Maya, let me do a synopsis here because of the enormity of this. I mean, this, as I mentioned, a 33-page single-space report, brothers and sisters. Influence over the mafia groups in Iranian aeronautical industry. Extensive influence over all flight companies, buying major stocks in all these companies and privatizing them. Tehran City Hall, the monopoly of power and wealth mafia, and it describes how they have controlled over all allocation of funds in Tehran, the city itself, using the city budget to advance their personal gain. Then they are into horse racing and have a huge, vast control of this. The relationship between the wealth and the 225,000 lodges without doubt the most widespread and secretive mafia in the world, the report states, and it goes into the particularity of this, the Special Enterprise Zone of Kish. They expand their projects to one-third of Kish Island. They take a piece of everything that is brought there. And it's interesting to note, they have special relations with those involved abroad, including leaders of Israel, with whom they have met secretly on more than one occasion. Seizure of power, facilitated by misappropriation of public properties, as the article describes. Maya.
Ralph, I don't want to restrict this program to the exposure by the FARS agency of Rafsanjani, because as we stated, this extends to the entire mullah machine, the clerical machine, and particularly I'd like to focus on this revelation in the Wall Street Journal of the shrine of the Iman Reza, because each year more than 12 million Iranians and Iraqis and other Shiite Muslims journey to this shrine in northeast Iran to pay homage to Iman Reza, a revered 9th century martyr. And the holdings, the actual shrine itself is vaster than the Vatican City, but the holdings of the shrine are immense. We are an Islamic conglomerate, says Mehdi Azizian, the business advisor and brother-in-law to the Ayatollah Abbas Vaez Tabezi, the shrine's chief. What are these holdings? It's not just one barnyard. It is a cluster of them, of these charitable foundations. This barnyard includes the ownership of mines, textile factories, a bus factory, a pharmaceutical plant, an engineering company, a bakery, a sugar refinery, dairy farms, cattle and camel ranches, orchards, and dozens of properties. It owns three-quarters of the land in Mashhad, Iran's second biggest city, and vast tracts elsewhere. It laid water pipes in Lebanon. It built a bridge between Iraq and Syria, and it sought road-building contracts in Algeria. Mr. Azizian says, we are involved in every industry. Every industry.
Operating in the shadows, the secret deals, the illegitimate and illegal income, the deceitful propaganda to obtain and maintain power have transformed these mafia groups, this report states, into the most opaque movement in contemporary society, engaging in clandestine diplomacy, opaque deal makings, and grabbing power. And the conduct of the wealth and power mafia in Iran should naturally be analyzed in this context. These high-flying individuals in charge for 8 years during the so-called construction period without being accountable forced the nation of Iran into debt from foreign banks, leave projects incomplete, have created a vast gap between the rich and the poor. The power-thirsty individuals work in rooms and prevent people from becoming aware of their secret and complex relationships. This is because transparency would destroy the popular acceptability of the mafia and would there cut their hands from the seat of power, quote unquote. It then goes on to particularize the maritime fleet of the wealth and power mafia. It is the most extraordinary indictment of the clerical mafia, indeed, of the theocratic dictatorship that hijacked the revolution of 1978.
And Ralph, to go back, you're talking about the Rafsanjani clerical control, but also, as I said, the shrine of Iman Reza and its network of so-called charitable institutions includes the ownership of, as I said, factories and farms, and the free trade zone along Iran's border with Turkmenistan is on the shrine land, which also serves the airport that was built by the shrine's construction division. And one quarter of private land in Iran belongs to the shrine. That is, it has title of a quarter of all the private land in Iran. The state is the largest landowner, but of all this private land, one charitable institution has control. So what we have in Iran has been compared to medieval Europe. Saeed Laylaz. He's an economist who has studied Mashhad. He compares Iran's situation to medieval Europe, where the wealth of the Roman Catholic Church and its claim to speak for God allowed the popes and cardinals to rival and often eclipse the kings. As Laylaz says, religion and economics are always together everywhere. Without cash, he says, clerics just become mystics. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the supreme leader's son is seen as the power broker with big ambitions, as the Los Angeles Times reports it. Mojtaba Khamenei is being positioned to succeed his father. There are a few anecdotes about him, but Mojtaba Khamenei, the son of Iran's supreme leader, wields vast power and is a key figure in orchestrating crackdown against anti-government protesters. He is tucked behind an elaborate security structure, an overlapping world that stretches from Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps to the motorcycle-riding Basiji militiamen, estimated to be as many as 10 million, an apparatus which is essentially a private gang in the name of the Islamic Revolution, but whose function is to preserve the wealth and power that we have described and to crush any opposition to it. The anxiety in the streets of Tehran today goes deeper than the outrage of the June 12th election that authorities say was won by President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. At least very close to it is Mojtaba Khamenei, the ultra-conservative cleric being positioned to succeed his father. Revered figures of the Islamic Revolution, the Los Angeles Times continues, such as Ali Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani and Hossein Ali Montazeri, deemed the senior Khomeini's religious and political resumes insufficient for him to succeed Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini when he died 20 years ago, find themselves outflanked. Ali Khamenei has created a bureaucracy to consolidate his power over military intelligence and foreign policy. So, indeed, as this article examines, the factions are at each other's throat and exposing each other's grasp and corruption, and in the process educating a nation about the actual nature of this vicious and venal regime utilizing the religious orthodoxy of Islam as a cover for its predations.
Ralph, the predations we have disclosed today of the clerical side of Iran, but the predations are also of the secular side, particularly the military. And the control of Ahmadinejad is particularly with the Revolutionary Guard, the Pasdaran, the major player. And the future privatization of power companies, metals, airlines, auto, banks, and elements of the oil and gas industry that he has on the chopping block. The potential spoils are immense, and the Pasdaran are major players because they're not only a militia, they have a far-flung economic empire similar to the economic empire of the military in Pakistan and the military in China. Let's look at the patronage. As Ahmadinejad's third interior minister in 4 years, Sadegh Mashouli is known as the billionaire minister. We have here a real war for the spoils. We must conclude today with our Taking Aim program. We're going to return to the subject of Iran in future weeks.
But Maya, we are going to examine, brothers and sisters, the mafia's massacre of the many, the destruction of the workers' movement, the oppression of the trade unions and of the militants and of the opposition that was, in fact, at the heart of the struggle against the Shah, and the devastation that has only now been challenged anew 30 years after the hijacking of the Iranian Revolution by this ultimately corrupt and fanatical and dictatorial cabal.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Clerical Dictatorship and the Structure of the Iranian Economy. Look at our website, www.takingaimradio.com, and contact us. We'd like to hear from you at takingaim@pacbell.net.
You know,